The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Tom Fairbanks. Tom, how are you today? You know, I know you spent 30 years in the media up in Alaska. And you told me before the trip, be prepared to drive a lot.
Yes, sir. Unless you want to rent a plane. That's the way a lot of people in Alaska get around.
Oh, my goodness. What a beautiful state. We had a great trip. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show on Friday, September the 7th, 2018. We are live from AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's home for local talk. We'll have our worldwide live listening, as usual, on my website, buckmastershow.com, and of course KVOI 24/7 have all of our programs. Our media partners, thank you. We like to do a shout out on Friday. Dylan Smith, thank you, Dylan, at TucsonSentinel.com. Dan Shear at the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun, a Tucson Media Group and its portfolio, which includes the Inside Tucson Business and Tucson Weekly. Our Friday Focus interview today, Chuck Huckleberry, Mr. Huckleberry, Pima County Administrator. Mr. Huckleberry, how are you, sir?
Just fine, Bill.
Joining me in our conversation with Mr. Huckleberry is Sarah Garrett Gasson, editorial page editor and columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Did you notice, Sarah, that I used to say joining me in the questioning?
I did.
I dropped that because it almost makes it sound like we've got one light bulb
right.
here in the room, you know, and somebody ready to pull out somebody's fingernails.
That would not be me. I'm going to leave that to you, Bill.
All right. There you go. All right. Mr. Huckleberry, let's begin with the Pima County Supervisors voting 3-1 to reject this $1.4 million border grant. It is known as Operation Stone Garden. It's been around here in Pima County for a while, hasn't it?
It has. It's basically been around for about 12 years. The first couple of years was under, I believe, a Republican administration, and I think the 8 under a Democratic and the last 2 under the present administration.
Hmm. Can you explain now how this will work? Do you call the federal government and say we're out, or I mean, what's the process, the transition?
Well, the grant actually goes through the state, through the State Department of Emergency Management and Homeland Security, and if the grant is a contract, and in the contract it's got a termination clause, and so what it simply says is either party can terminate with 30 days notice, and on Tuesday, we sent in our 30-day notice, and so what that means is that the grant is effectively terminated on about the 5th day of October, and any expenses incurred or services delivered up until that point are reimbursable. And the grant is really two pieces. One is about $1.1 million in overtime for sheriff's deputies and about $300,000 in equipment. The equipment has not been purchased yet, so I'm going to assume that it won't be purchased. But the sheriff has expended overtime funds already, and probably will be in the neighborhood of $500,000 to $700,000 of overtime being spent on the grant prior to its actual termination date.
Will there be a burden on the county to pick up any money here?
Well, probably not. I mean, the grant has language in it that talks about being able to recover certain costs and things. But in this particular case, these are services that have been delivered and delivered successfully. And so I doubt that there's any ability to claw back any of the service expenses, particularly the overtime.
All right. Here's Sarah.
The sheriff, Mark Napier, has a piece that's going to be in the Star on Sunday. And in it, and he said this elsewhere, too, that public safety is kind of coming at the expense of making a political statement by the Board of Supervisors. So do you agree with that? And is public safety and the remote areas, the safety of those areas that the sheriff has said don't get attended to as often without this money, do you agree with him?
Not really. And I think you have to kind of go back and look at Operation Stone Garden. It's really overtime. So these people are already employed as deputies, and so they're working, and they're eligible for county overtime anyway, and particularly these remote areas, and they're staffed to a certain level. And all of those positions and all those expenses are included in the base budget the county pays for, have nothing to do with Operation Stone Garden overtime. One of the issues I think we've always dealt with, and in fact it was the subject of an Inspector General report from the Department of Homeland Security in November of 2017, dealt with Operation Stone Garden, and it discusses in some detail the need for greater accountability and performance measures. And I think one of the things that, again, I recommended the grant, and I recommended the grant mostly to gather those performance measures, basically to find out just how effective Stone Garden was from a public safety perspective. That was something I think that was recognized to be needed in the Inspector General report, and something that we had been working on, and obviously won't be able to carry on that work since the board decided to terminate the contract.
So is the sheriff raising kind of a red, is that a Red Riding Hood kind of, or not Red Riding Hood, the sky is falling, Chicken Little. Sorry, mixing my nursery rhymes here. Is that just sort of a way to alarm people and gain support for keeping the grant, if you're saying he's not entirely accurate?
I think it's a lot of just trying to make his point. And unfortunately, there's politics on both sides of this issue. And I think that claiming that we're in serious public safety jeopardy because we don't have it is probably an exaggeration.
And do you think that, can you explain a bit about what exactly the local sheriff's personnel were doing in Stone Garden? Were they enforcing immigration laws, which I know they don't have the authority to do? Were they helping Border Patrol? Were they, if the Border Patrol wanted to pull over a car or look at a car at a checkpoint, but they didn't have the authority to do so, the Pima County sheriffs could say, oh, well, their taillight's out, I can stop them. Things like that. What was the relationship?
What was their role, in other
yeah.
words? Yeah.
Yeah, the relationship was is that they were basically kind of working in concert with the Customs and Border Patrol agents. And in concert simply means that the deputy has no ability to enforce immigration law and is basically prohibited from doing that by policy of the sheriff. But on the other hand, the deputy enforces infractions of state law. And so if the deputy observes those infractions, he enforces the state law violations. And in the course of doing that, if in fact he comes across or a suspicion of the immigration status of those who have broken a state law, he can then, in fact, call the Border Patrol and work with them. So it's not as clear as it probably should be, and I think that's part of the concern and part of the problem is that there are some who say that the deputies were enforcing immigration law, and that's not correct. But on the other hand, just how close that relationship was, it's difficult to say. Simply because we don't have a lot of the metrics that would actually prove it one way or the other. And that was our point of continuing the grant, at least mine was, is to gather factual information so that we can answer those questions definitively once and for all.
And you said real quick, and I know we have
a couple of callers. So.
You said the county has had it for about 12 years?
About 12 years.
So has there ever been questions about it? The appropriateness, the roles, who's doing what, if it's a good thing to accept before the Trump administration?
No, I don't think so. And I think probably what Operation Stone Garden got caught in the middle of is obviously a very divisive position on immigration now. That's not getting any easier. And so therefore, it kind of polarized both sides to this. And so it draws a lot of attention to it. And I think, unfortunately, it's kind of the scapegoat of current immigration policy.
All right, let's see if we can work these two calls in before we tell everybody about Mona's Danish Bakery, which I will be gladly doing in a few minutes. Okay, Robert, let's put Robert on here first because he got in first. Go ahead, Robert.
Yes.
What's on your mind?
City manager, without being as disingenuous as you've been up to this point, can you clearly restate why you would give up $11 million in a grant that we badly need for the sheriff's department?
Okay, Robert.
And it is political.
Okay.
It's all about them rounding up Mexicans.
Okay, Robert, thank you. He said a figure there, that 11 million?
Well, I think he's it's 1.1 million for overtime. It's not 11 million. So, and it basically is one of the luxuries of being the county administrator, not the city manager, is that I get to make recommendations and I don't have to make the tough decisions. The board does.
Right. Okay. So, but you recommended to continue.
Yes, I did.
Okay. But the board decided no, and they're the elected officials who voted for it.
There you go. Matthew, what's on your mind, sir?
Yeah. Well, Chuck, obviously this is a very difficult subject for the community, but I believe that Sheriff Napier this is not going to affect the fact that Border Patrol has a person working in the sheriff's office, and the sheriff has a policy of turning over up to like 70 people, 70 types of criminal activities to that via list or whatever, turn them over to Border Patrol if they meet the qualifications. That's not going to change by us walking away from the $1 million, is it? So can you clarify that? And it's a tough call for everybody out there.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks, Matthew.
Yes, the sheriff has had immigration and custom enforcement officials located in the jail since he's taken office or shortly thereafter. And Operation Stone Garden would have nothing to do with that. And these are basically individuals who basically take custody of those who are not citizens, who have been detained in the jail but are being released for one reason or another. And it's called ICE detainers. We have about 102 non-citizens now residing in the adult detention center.
Out of how many in the population, roughly?
About 1,900.
Okay.
And so you can tell, obviously, it's a minor component of the population. And of those, probably only, I think about 60 have what is called called ICE detainers, which is basically interest of Customs and Border Enforcement if those individuals were to be released.
Okay. County Administrator Huckleberry and Sarah, it's time for Mona's Danish Bakery. And usually when I ask people, do you like bakery goods, I don't think I have received any negatives on that one. So even though the population here is split, certainly on political matters, when it comes to the home of the Danish Kringle, pretty much everybody says, I love bakery goods.
Yes, I can get behind some
you
bakery
can get
goods
behind
in general.
That. All right. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Owner Steve he's a great baker, and he's got a team of bakers. They get up very early in the morning to make sure the bread that is now being served on your sandwich up at Mona's came out of the oven just a couple of hours ago, and there's a wide variety of breads to choose from. Go to my website to check out about Mona's, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. The website, buckmastershow.com, a link to Mona's and all of our great partners who make our program possible. 790-2040 for Mr. Huckleberry, who will stick around for another segment, as will Sarah. We'll be right back. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Monday during the noon hour, the Monday Political Face-Off features commentators Bruce Ash and Dr. Don Jorgensen. Plus, the monthly Better Business Bureau report, Buckmaster noon to 1 on Tucson's AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are within a few seconds of being exactly at 12:22, but we also should point out that this program re-airs on Saturday morning. So if you're listening on Saturday morning, it will not be 12:22 when you're listening. Yeah, it'd be, you know, the program's on from 7 to 8 tomorrow morning. 790-2040, if you'd like to join in with Mr. Huckleberry. So far, we've been concentrating Sarah Garrett Gasson about the Sheriff's Department Operation Stone Garden, and we mentioned a little bit about ICE in the jail, but there's another issue pertaining to the Sheriff's Department, and that is the Sheriff's Department accused of violating state pay laws, Mr. Huckleberry. We've got, what, 8 Pima County law enforcement officers who now have brought suit, say they are owed some money.
Well, I think that's still a claim, but I haven't seen the lawsuit, and as a claim, I can probably talk about it. It's the whole issue is on-call pay. If a deputy works a regular shift and for some reason there is a thought that he may be called back to duty, he gets on-call pay for basically staying home or doing whatever he does. And it's really discretionary. It's up to management in the Sheriff's Department as to determine who gets on-call pay and who doesn't and what the particular issue is. And I think these are a lot of school resource officers who I think they started reducing on-call pay. And if you recall, I even pointed out to the sheriff very early on that there was excessive on-call pay basically being used as a crutch in lieu of a raise. And so what we did this last budget year is provided some fairly substantial pay increases for deputies, and that was to basically supplement or offset the previous issues with regard to pay. And right now, deputies are the second highest paid deputies in the state of Arizona, just behind Maricopa. And Maricopa has an entirely different competitive environment with cities such as Mason, Tempe, and Scottsdale, and City of Phoenix.
Okay, let's go back to Stone Garden, because a caller who did not want to go on the air, but thank you, Tom, for giving me the message here on my screen. The caller wants to know why, if Mr. Huckleberry was in favor of Stone Garden, did the board say no to the grant?
Well, that's pretty simple. I make recommendations based on, you know, what I believe is the best for the county, and the board sets policy. And the board is the final determination, and they have the final point of decision with regard to whether grants are accepted or terminated.
So just because you may recommend something doesn't mean that the board is going to approve it.
That's correct. Very often I may recommend something to the board and they will see another side to the issue and not approve even what I recommend on something else.
Okay, Sarah?
So roads are an eternal topic in Pima County. Can you give us the latest on status of road improvements, of repairs, anything like that? What's going on?
Yes, we're in the business of trying to repair a lot of roads at this point in time. We have some pretty active programs going on, repairing and reconstructing a lot of our arterial streets. The arterial system is in pretty good shape. What's in absolute terrible shape is the local streets. The local streets the county maintains, and it's for a couple of reasons. One, there's not been any revenue increases for 30 years. Vehicle efficiencies increased dramatically, so actually tax revenues are down.
Because they're using less gas.
They're using less gas. And so you throw those things in combination with our arterial revenue bond program. It widened something like 60 major highways in the county in the last 20 years. And you get to the point of where there's not enough money to maintain the local roads, and that's what our problem has been and will continue to be. Unless there's additional revenues pumped into transportation that comes either from the state legislature, which is not inclined to do so. We've been asking for a gas tax increase for 13 years, and that's not going anywhere. So the last option available to the board was to call for a bond election in November of this year, Proposition 463, $430 million to repair the worst roads in Pima County and basically take on in earnest local pavement repair and arterial repavement reconstruction program, such that we can begin to make some significant progress in repairing the roads that, unfortunately, because of lack of revenues, have fallen into disrepair.
Here's an interesting question. A caller wants to know the makeup of the board of the Pima County, and does Chuck Huckleberry have the vote to break any ties? Kind of like, I guess it would be the president of the Senate,
right,
can break the
right
vice president. So are you a voting member of the Pima County Board of Supervisors?
No, I'm not. Never have voted, never been able to vote.
Could you give our listener, though, a little background? Of what is the makeup?
The makeup is basically five districts, and each member of the board represents about one-fifth of the county's population, and it's the makeup is, at this current rate, three Democrats and two Republicans.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, getting back to the roads, there was, what was that, a 4-0 vote. Allie Miller was absent for this vote on Tuesday. Basically setting the stage, setting the table for if Proposition 463, the Regional Road Reconstruction, Preservation, and Repair measure, which will be on the ballot, if this passes. This,
yes,
is setting the table.
Yes, what it is basically our Truth and Bonding Code allows, it requires us to actually have a very detailed plan about how that money would be spent at least 30 days prior to the election, so that the public can actually go in and look at those documents and see how the money's going to be spent. We obviously like to adopt it further ahead of time to give the public more time to examine the ordinance. And so it basically lays out from A to Z how that money would be spent in road repair if the voters approve it.
Okay. I want to get certainly Rick onto the show because he's been waiting, and we are coming up on 12:30. But because it is my program, I'm going to extend this just a little bit. And I know Jim Ninsel is on hold up in Phoenix where he's having car trouble, but I think he's at a bar and grill waiting us out. So, Jim, you'll be listening here while we're going to keep Mr. Huckleberry about 5 minutes till about 12:35. Rick, go ahead.
Hey, Bill, twice in 1 week, my friend.
Oh, hi, Rick.
How are
Rick
you,
Grinnell guys? With us. Rick was just on the program yesterday, right, Rick? Or was it Wednesday?
Wednesday, I believe.
That's correct. And you were talking about the 9/11 challenge, which is coming up on 9/11 anniversary, 17th anniversary, on this Tuesday. Go ahead, Rick.
Okay. Chuck, I've always been rather confused by the thinking process of this Board of Supervisors. But I'm really wondering, how can we turn around on one hand, ask voters to pass a transportation bond, and they say it's not going to raise our taxes, but assessed valuations will go up, and then turn around and take away opportunity dollars to help our public safety officers do their jobs? Can you explain the thinking process of this particular board and the way they come about some of these decisions?
Okay.
That's literally the million-dollar question.
Yes, Mr. Huckleberry, the mind reader here. Go ahead. Thank you, Rick, for calling in.
Okay. Well, the decision to basically terminate the Operation Stone Garden grant was a policy decision made basically on, I think, current federal immigration policy. And it's $1 million of overtime. It's not $1 million of direct pay to sheriff's deputies. So it was premium pay, and it has nothing to do with those deputies covering their normal responsibilities for the county. The $430 million for road repair covers about half of the regional deficit today in local road repair. And so it's basically a down payment on getting started with real road repairs, and so that's the board's decision on that. And their decision was largely based on the fact that the tax rate would not increase and actually probably will continue to decrease in the length of those bonds because of the capacity of the county, because we've been paying down previous debt rather rapidly. The average length of debt on those bonds is 3.4 years, which is really unheard of. It's almost pay-as-you-go financing, so I think that help the board make a decision that says, let's make an earnest effort, or give the public the opportunity to make an earnest effort at road repair.
But tax rate may go down, but if the valuation of your house increases, you could be ending up paying more dollars, even if the rate goes down.
Absolutely. There's two parts of the equation. It's assessed value and it's rate. And what we've been able to do this year, and you can see this in operation, as we expand the tax base through economic development actions, we get more taxpayers and tax value. We've actually reduced the primary property tax rate this year 40 cents, or almost 10%. And that's a combination of basically, and the assessed values probably were fairly stable over that time. They may have gone up on the aggregate at 1% or less, but the rest of it's been new construction added to the base. And so there's a whole series of factors, but the primary principle and the driver is always the rate, and the secondary effect is the assessed value. And given there's probably 400,000 to 500,000 parcels that have an assessed value, some will go up, some will go down, and a lot of them will stay the same. So you have to make generalized statements.
All right, I got about 2 minutes before my self-imposed 12:35 break. Caller wants to know what's happening with the Sonoran Corridor. We haven't heard about that in a while. Can you give us a quick update?
Yes, the Arizona Department of Transportation is in the middle of what we call environmental and locational studies associated with the Sonoran Corridor, and what that does is look at a whole array of options about how to connect Interstate 19 and Interstate 10. And my guess is that some of those studies will be done later in the fall. And so we'll have a better idea where it's going to be located. But that's a process that's ongoing right now with the Arizona Department of Transportation, where we participate with many other agencies.
All right. Tom, I have 1 minute to my self-imposed deadline, and I see Ingrid is called. Ingrid, because I'm such a nice guy today, I'm going to work you in. Go ahead. Hi, Ingrid.
Hello.
Real quick, your quick question.
How much more revenue has been taken in this year as compared to last year? What is the difference?
Revenue? Situation? Yeah. Okay, thank you, Ingrid.
Well, I think the revenue is actually down because, again, I said, and you're going to get your tax bill in about 2 weeks so you can confirm it, we've dropped the primary property tax rate 40 cents. And so if you look in the aggregate, there's probably less revenue being taken in for the current budget year we're in now versus the one we were in last year.
Okay, how's that? Thank you very much. Mr. Huckleberry, I hope you have a great weekend. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay, Sarah Garrett-Gaston of the Star sticks around. Jim Nensel's been on hold. Jim joins us after we take the break. We'll have our roundtable portion of the hour right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Neighborhood stalwarts. Virginia and Frank Butley are overjoyed when Tanya and Pablo Del Valle move into the fixer-upper next door. But opposing views about culture, politics, and landscaping push these well-meaning couples into a border battle. Don't miss Native Gardens, a laugh-out-loud, big-hearted comedy with a lot of sharp little teeth. September 8th through the 29th at the Temple of Music and Art. Tickets available at arizonatheater.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This is the roundtable portion of the hour. Sarah Garrett Gasson is a columnist and editor of the editorial page at the Arizona Daily Star. And Jim Nintzel is the executive editor. That is his official title for the Tucson Weekly. And Jim was on his way up to the high country when he had a blowout. Now he's trying to get the tire taken care of. He has found a local bar and grill to give us a call. Jim, how are you?
I'm safe here at the Hideaway Lounge in Thomas Road, waiting them to get my car fixed up here. And it's an exciting trip, although I think I'm headed back to Tucson today rather than sticking it out.
You're going to cancel the whole thing and cut your loss. You might as well go on up to Flagstaff, for goodness sake, once the tire's fixed. What do you think, Sarah?
Well, we'll see how we'll see how it plays out.
What do you think?
Well, you're halfway there, but
kind of.
A thing like that kind of tends to put a damper on festivities.
Jim, what do you think about Grant Woods, former attorney general, and, of course, is a Republican? He's thinking about a run for the U.S. Senate in 2020, and this would be, he'd cross over and be a Dem. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a fascinating idea. You know, certainly it would be attractive for, I think, independent voters and even some Republicans if he were up against, say, a Kelly Ward. In a race like that, I think his challenge, of course, would be winning a Democratic primary, because I'm sure there are a lot of Democrats who would want to wade into that race as well. And so we'll have to wait and see what the field looks like. It may be that he couldn't get out of a Dem primary, and he could always go as an independent, and that would also scramble the equation, but it's certainly fascinating political parlor talk.
And Senator Kyle, your editorial in the Star, Sarah, Kyle is fitting replacement for McCain in the Senate. What do you think about that?
Well, I think of the options available. If you're looking, as we were saying, it should be someone who is in the McCain mold. It should be someone with who is a conservative, not a Trump person. Someone who is has experience and knowledge. I think John Kyle fits that bill. I think that I'm not enthused at all about the idea that I'll just be here through the Kavanaugh nomination process and confirmation process, and then if McSally loses the Senate to Kyrsten Sinema, I could drop out. He didn't say that explicitly, of course, but that's kind of obviously the plan. He could he's not saying he's going to do it till 2020, mm-hmm. but he's in there.
He's in there to the end of this term, the end of the year. Yeah,
right.
And
I
presumably think that would be to shepherd the Kavanaugh confirmation.
Right. And I think that's clearly Governor Ducey's, who's also a Republican, a priority, and a priority in the Senate. And so I think if you're looking at who is most like John McCain, John Kyle kind of fits that bill.
And your columnist, Tim Steller, our friend, had an interesting column mm-hmm. about the whole scenario and how it could play out, even to the point where if Governor Ducey loses to Dr. Garcia in the general election in November, and if Kyle were to, say, resign in November or December, Governor Ducey would still make the appointment.
Right, right. I mean, he's a seat warmer. He's a qualified seat warmer, but he's been a lobbyist for pharmaceutical companies in the defense industry since he left Senate of his own accord a few years ago.
So, a placeholder.
Yeah, okay, seat warmer is probably a little too inelegant.
Jim, what do you think about all this? Let's hear what your opinion is.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's going to be real interesting is what happens with the Affordable Care Act with John Kyle there, and without John McCain, of course, stopped its repeal. We'll see how much longer John Kyle does choose to serve, whether he sticks out the rest of the term or not. But it certainly scrambles the calculus in terms of whether how and when Republicans will reapproach a repeal of the Affordable Care Act. We know that Martha McSally said this week that she's eager to continue the efforts to repeal it, and it remains unclear exactly where she's at, because in the past she said she does not want to repeal protections for people with pre-existing conditions, for example. But she's certainly then changed in terms of how she's voted since then. So, you know, it's John Kyle, I think, is a reliable conservative vote, without a doubt, in the U.S. Senate.
Sarah, thank you, by the way, Sarah, for joining the conversation with your colleague, Tim Steller, the day after here on the Buckmaster Show. It was a good hour talking about some of the surprises. Mm-hmm. And Jim, I know you were listening as well, and there was a representative on that show from The Weekly. What did you think of the Nick Pearson? And I think that was one of the big stories in CD3 of Mr. Pearson emerging out of the primary. He was my guest here on the show Wednesday. I met him for the first time. And what did you think? Did you think that was truly one of the big upsets out of the primary?
Well, I think that was one of those races people weren't paying too much attention to, because what you're looking at is basically who's going to be the sacrificial lamb against Raul Grijalva in a district that's more than 50% Democrat and I think 25 to 30% Republican. So the odds are certainly in Raul Grijalva's favor, especially in a year where you don't see a lot of support, if you look at the special elections, at least it's happened so far, for Republicans out there. The public seems to be leaning a lot more towards Democrats, at least in those special elections and in what we're seeing with the generic ballot and whatnot. I think if you see suddenly the NRCC start dumping a lot of money into CD3 and supporting Mr. Pearson, then you'll know that he actually has a shot over there, and there's some polling that indicates that, but I think it's a long shot. I think the other thing that's going to be interesting is seeing what kind of support Wendy Rogers gets up in CD1.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she ran a very scorched earth campaign against Steve Smith there, and I think there's a lot of bitterness. I mean, he actually had the Saddlebrook Republican Club coming out and censuring Wendy Rogers, and that's a huge part of that district. And, you know, will those feelings be healed between now and Election Day? And again, you'll know more about the polling once you see what kind of money the NRCC and the DCCC are going to start spending on behalf of those candidates.
That's a good insight. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the race in CD2 with Leah Merkez Peterson on the Republican side and Ann Kirkpatrick on the Democratic side is going to just overwhelm everything.
Mm-hmm.
In a large part of the Tucson area. So I think you got to keep, Jim's right, you have to keep an eye on the national money. But we have had some surprises, like Nick Pearson. So whether he's sort of an unknown in the Tucson area may not be. He has a base, obviously, in the southern part of the state. And I think that it will be interesting. We've seen various Republicans try to go up against Raul Grijalva over the years, and I think that he's certainly one that seems to have strong roots in the community, mm-hmm. if not a shot at winning the election.
Wasn't it, Jim, wasn't it, and Sarah, Ruth McClung, a couple of cycles ago that really gave Raul Grijalva quite a run? I think that the final numbers were pretty darn close, weren't they, Jim?
They were, and I don't remember them off the top of my head, but that, you know, that was 2010, and that was the year, you know, the Tea Party really came back, and the Republican Party had that incredible year where they retook Congress. And I think you're going to see the mirror opposite of that this year. So that's why I don't think Rob has much to worry about.
Jim, I was just going through your column, your long-running column, The Skinny, and were you at all surprised about Michelle Reagan losing, you know, being the incumbent Secretary of State, being knocked off in a primary? It's kind of unusual for the incumbent in a state race to lose a primary. Any surprise there?
Yeah, you had actually three incumbents knocked out on primary night, which was interesting. And Michelle Reagan's defeat, I guess it wasn't so much surprised that she lost the race, because she'd had some pretty high-profile blunders with the election
right.
the elections that she was supposed to be overseeing for 4 years, and some other issues with her website and money spent on a campaign finance tool and all sorts of stuff. But I was surprised by the margin. I mean, that was like 2-1 in support of this guy that I think very few people had even heard of, and who apparently has arrived in Arizona and decided he wants to be a heartbeat away from the governor's office.
So yes, his name is Steve Gaynor. We've had him on the show, yeah. And it's interesting. And
for sure. And I think the other one, the Corporation Commission,
right?
Tom Forsey losing his office, I think it's real interesting, especially since he was one of the people who was really in support of CPS and the others, his battle going on there, whether APS should reveal its records on campaign spending. Bob Burns is pushing for that. He may get enough Republicans elected on that board who agree with him, and we may see APS having to reveal some dirty secrets.
And the third incumbent would be, of course, school superintendent.
Diane Douglas.
Yeah.
I think she made no friends with the Republicans from literally almost the first day on the job. So that wasn't really a surprise. But I think it's going to be an interesting race. I think that's an office that is more important than a lot of voters, just average voters, recognize. So I think it's going to be a tumultuous one.
Yeah, that would be Mr. Riggs, who was a former congressman in California, and the Republican side for school superintendent, Frank Riggs, and he is going to be up against a woman who is actually a school teacher in Peoria. Mm-hmm. Peoria, I believe.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we know Frank from his previous attempt
running
here. So he has some name recognition.
Yes, he does. Okay, Jim, final thoughts. Time for you to get back to see how your car repairs are going.
Yeah, hoping to get on the road and back to T-Town and get back to the office and surprise my employees, who all thought I would be out of town. See just how much goofing off they're doing. But, I just really looking forward. I think CD2 as you guys were saying, it's certainly going to be the race to watch. It's going to be a real throwdown between Ann Kirkpatrick and Leah Marquez Peterson. I give the advantage to Kirkpatrick only because of the way the generic ballot's been going, but this is an extraordinarily competitive district, and I would not count Leah Marquez Peterson out.
All right. We will look forward to it. Jim, thanks a lot. Have safe travels back to, as you call it, T-Town, back to Tucson. Thank you very much. Sarah,
hey, you bet. Thank you.
Sarah, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
What's coming up in the Star real quickly?
Well,
Sunday.
We have...
not that Saturday doesn't matter, but how about focusing on Sunday?
Yeah, Sunday we have a good piece by Sheriff Mark Napier about Stone Garden. Mm-hmm. We have pieces from our local conservative columnists, and those are always interesting and get a lot of reader response. So I hope you'll check it out.
I will. I subscribe to the paper.
Yay!
There you go. Have a great weekend. We'll be right back with Weekend Watch. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improved regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
All righty then, Weekend Watch presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Go to their fine website, southwestnewmexico.org. That's the starting place to check out all the great places to stay and several dozen recreation opportunities in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, which is only a three-hour drive, and there's lots to do, including just hanging out in historic Silver City. Let's welcome now the longtime host of Weekend Watch, Matt Russell, award-winning Tucson publicist, dedicated foodie, Inside Tucson Business food and beverage columnist, and he loves a good margarita on occasion. Hello, sir.
Hey, nice to have you back in the Buckmaster chair.
Oh,
I missed you while you
goodness.
Were out of town.
Oh, well, we had some great fish, great salmon, and, of course, halibut. It was terrific.
Delicious.
All right.
Well, you mentioned margaritas. Yeah. You may remember a few weeks ago on your show, we talked about my judging the World Margarita Championship. And I'm pleased to report that the winning margarita is now available to the public. Mm. Now, it's called the Yellow Verde Margarita, made by the gifted hands of Chef Ryan Clark of the Casino del Sol. Now, this libation features a nice silver tequila, some orange liqueur, some fresh citrus, and check it out, a generous scoop of salted sorbet that also includes cucumber, tomatillo, cilantro, and mezcal. That's how Chef Ryan rolls. It's now available at Casino del Sol's PY Steakhouse and the Tequila Factory, so get over there this weekend to see what a gold medal margarita tastes like.
Some of the witnesses showed you had some shaky legs standing up there in Reno, I believe it was Reno, where you were judging that margarita contest.
Absolutely. I'm back to regularly scheduled programming now.
What's going on at Downtown Kitchen?
Well, Chef Janos Wilder, he kind of continues his global adventures, and fans of Korean food will enjoy his special new menu dedicated to the culture and cuisine of Jeonju, South Korea. Now, among the appetizer options is his version of KFC, Korean fried chicken, with fried chicken trotters. Now,
what?
If you don't know what trotters are, yes, it's the feet. Main course options include slow roasted pork with a house-made kimchi, and a wonderful dessert that got my attention, caramel ice cream sundae with a marshmallow fluff. Mm. You can transport your palate to South Korea this weekend for a taste of Jeonju at Downtown Kitchen and Cocktail.
You're on real strong footing, I guess, on that in that area. Huh, with the feet. Football season, everybody wants a good meal with a football game, I'll tell you.
I'll be looking out for some serious game day gastronomy. Now, you don't have to look far to get a memorable burger, a great bucket of wings, other football fare, but some local sports bars are kind of upping their game with a fun take on football food, like Mulligan's, for example, over there on Golf Links in Harrison. They have a brand new menu of items, including a Nathan's hot dog, split and stuffed with pepper jack cheese, wrapped in bacon, fried, and topped with black beans, caramelized onions, tomatoes, chipotle, aioli, and mustard. Talk about a touchdown for your taste buds, Bill. Whoever your teams are this weekend, you can be confident that some great food is just ahead.
You need a backhoe to get that sucker up into your mouth. All right, Matt, thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Cheers, Bill. Thanks.
All right, the Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, wholly responsible for the content of our program. I'm out of time, but except to say Tom Fairbanks, engineer, producer. Thank you, Tom. Great to see you again. You were right about Alaska. Have a great weekend, everybody.